At this point, let me call attention to our guests for today's plenary. The local host committee deliberated quite a bit on who to select for our three plenary speakers, and there are so many people to choose from, and we considered two significant things. These must be significant voices in arts and culture who have made deep contributions, and also we wanted to have someone who would help set a tone for the conference, and so we turned to a native voice, and today joining us is Angie Behrens, who will be greeting us with a native welcome. Angie is a Tongva Native American, and the Tongva, just to give you some background, were the original inhabitants of the Los Angeles Basin, which we are here in. The Tongva were a large community with a rich culture, and for instance, they were the ones who greeted Spanish explorer Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo upon his arrival off the shore in 1542. The Tongva's original name was lost to cultural assimilation, however, and they actually also became known as the Gabrielinos because of their close association with the Mission San Gabriel. Angie Behrens is a Gabrielino Tongva who works as a cultural consultant of the Gabrielino Tongva Tribal Council. In addition, she has worked as a commissioner for the City of Los Angeles and for the County Native American Commission, and she is currently the president of the Gabrielino Tongva Springs Foundation. Please join me in warmly welcoming Angie Behrens.
It is my pleasure and an honor to be here. And as our nation, our nation was from Topanga, that's the Santa Monica Mountains, to San Gabriel, and then to Eliseo Creek, which is Orange County, St. Nicholas, Santa Catalina, and the coast. And this was our nation at one time. And so I am a native, and I am a card-carrying Indian. At this time, I would like to, it's just such an honor to be here, but I'd like to welcome you in my language. Iyonak, Iyogin, Tukupunaksya, Suchikoi, Munatanyan Masarami, Humohin, Tukupra, Musimanya Mayana, Yo, Tukupar, Hamin Bayoksiyoni, Masarami, Matuma, Koya, Boksi, Yayo, Ah. Ah, and at this time, I would like to introduce one of our keynote speakers, and Pualani Kanaka Oli Kanaheli, along with her sister, I'll tell you a little bit of her bio, this is her bio, sister Nalani co-directed Holo Mai Pali and Kemaki Kamakahama Pai'i, a dance drama about the warrior chief Kamiheia and co-founder both Hika Alani, a Hawaiian cultural protocol group, and Puana, a native Hawaiian organization established for script writers of stage, film, and video. Her many awards include NEA National Heritage Fellowship Award, Award for Preservation of Hawaiian Language, Dance, and Chant, by State Council of Hawaiian Heritage, the Governor's Award for Distinguished Achievement in the Arts, No Hoko Hano Hano Award for Best Hawaiian Language Album of the Year, and a Distinguished Ki Ali Paui Hai Hawaiian of the Year Award. Ms. Kanahele is the Instructor of Hawaiian Studies and Chairperson of the Humanities Department at Hawaii Community College. She is President of the Idna Kanaka Oli Foundation, a Hawaiian Indigenous People's Conference on Education, and served as a cultural workshop organizer for the Doe and Bishop Museum, and also has served on the UNESCO Advisory Committee on Native Cultures. And it is my honor at this time to present Paolani from our nation to your nation, and to thank you so much for keeping our culture, your culture, alive. Thank you. And I'd like to present you. Oh, hey, oh,
We have a gift of ancestral memory, and we have options as to the treatment of this gift. We may choose to carry it around with us and not bother to unwrap it. Whether we choose to disregard it altogether, or whether we choose to toss it on the side, is still our decision. Some of us find it old-fashioned and worthless, and we decide to eventually toss it away. Some of us find it useful for intellectual intercourse. However, for many of us, this gift is the beginning of who we are. It is the foundation of our being. This gift of ancestral memory took many lifetimes to wrap. And when we realize the value of this gift, we take the time to unwrap it. It has within it many lifetimes of experiences of love, of existence, of wisdom, of understanding. And we take the time to enjoy each exposure and understand it before we continue. It will unfold precept upon precept, and each will have a clue to inspire us to go on.
Oh, now I'm here. Kunana, kabulena, Mahalo nui loa. Thank you very much. I have to set up a clock over here so I know how long I'm speaking. And as soon as you want me to quit, my clock doesn't, not on the same time as yours, because my clock says 8:24. a.m. So I guess I'm not on the right time with you. So Don, you need to tell me when I'm going to quit. I don't know. About 11:45. Half an hour. Okay. Thank you. We Native Hawaiians believe that we have a storage of collective information within us from past lives of which we derive our physical makeup. And when we're living in a cycle of continuum, it is bound to activate within us the retrospect of primal imagery. When put in the right environment with certain circumstances, the eyes will recognize familiarities and will awaken in us a sense of knowing. The nomenclature to this collective is ancestral memory. When we realize that we have this within us, we try not to miss opportunities to gain ancestral knowledge, because it was they, our ancestors, who were very much in tune with their environment, because they were the products of their cosmos, and their gods were the phenomenal elemental forms. Like last night, that was a visit. The last dance you saw my grandson do, and this is my grandson, by the way. His name is Kaumaka Iva, and I asked him if he would come along with me, and he said yes. He really doesn't have a choice. Because the asking is really not if you can, but you will. And he understands that. I'm only an expert in Native Hawaiian philosophy. I don't pretend to know to be wise in the ways of all natives. However, I think that what I have to say today has universal truths to it and is applicable to all natives who adhere to the divinity of their environment. All my life I was raised in a dance and a chant tradition. And in my language it's called He Kuuna Mele Oli Ameha Ahula. Oli Amehula, that's dance and chant basically. We memorize great volumes of chant or of mele. And mele are literature that is composed in poetry form or in song form. And in English we prefer to call that chant, because the intention of these meles or these chants is, or these compositions, is that it should be delivered in a chant, as you heard us deliver it this morning. Those are different chant forms. My grandson can trace 9 generations of mele oli and hula practitioners. And this is our family tradition, our family kuuna. A tradition in the Hawaiian world stays within the family, because it has the protection of the family in front of us and behind us, the seen and the unseen. It does not formally descend to people outside of the family. However, teaching the tradition is inclusive of the greater community. We do not exclude anybody who has a desire to learn. And it is because of this inclusiveness that we have so many hula teachers today. There are my grandson and my other grandson, 2 of them just got back from Mexico where they perform, Mexico City. They have 300 hula halaos or dance schools, hula schools in Mexico City. No, wait. They have over 1,000 in the great Mexico area. They have over 1,000 hula halaos in Japan. They have hula halaos in Amsterdam, in Germany, in France, in Egypt. Some students, when they come to learn, are just satisfied with the basic movements and leave before knowing that this indeed is in fact hula in its elementary form. And I'm afraid that it is this elementary form that has dominated the worldview of my tradition, and I am sorry about that. We have unwritten protocols in hula, and the student of hula learns do's, do's. You do this this way, this is the way this is done, follow me, and you will do it correctly. And one only learns the don'ts very, very swiftly if they make a mistake. There's a certain amount of intuitive sense that is expected from the student or from the learner. And if the student learns to depend on this intuition, then they never learn the don'ts except by the mistakes of others. The student of hula eventually realizes, and especially if they're in the family, that there are dimensions of understanding that they need to penetrate in order to become the teacher. And so one of these dimensions is intuitive dependency. And this is the dimension that initially awakens your potential. I want to discuss hula as the primary focus for my talk, which is Native Perspective on Innovation. I can only render this perspective again from a Hawaiian point of view because I am only Hawaiian. I was born and raised in Hilo of Hawaiian ancestry. My parents were born and raised on the island of Hawaii, the same island that I'm from. Their parents before them and many, many generations before them were born and raised on that island. We received our hula tradition through matrilineal descent from that island, from my grandmother's side and my mother's side. Our hula tradition are fire dances. So what you saw, my grandfather, I call him my grandfather, and he is. But what you saw my grandson do are fire dances. And fire dances are only inherited by the fire clan. And the fire clan are related to all fire forms of the earth, of the sky, and of the ocean, inclusive of the sun, inclusive of the stars, inclusive of all phases of eruption, earthquake, some of the greenery, some of the trees that we call kawila. These are lightning trees, fire trees, inclusive of the lightning that you saw last night that especially came to visit us. And I would like to think. And it's also inclusive of some sharks, some eels, some fish, some bugs. The centipede is a fire form. And it's inclusive of the initiator of greenery after a lava flow. And I just want to talk a little bit about this initiator, which I didn't intend to. But her name is this deity of greenery. Is Hiiaka Ikapoli Opele. Hiiaka Ikapoli Opele is the younger sister of our fire deity, of our volcano deity. And her, and the volcano deity, her kuleana or her responsibility is to make islands, to build land. Her sister, Hiiaka, her responsibility is to heal the land. Whether this sister, Hiiaka, was born as an egg, and then eventually, Pele took care of this egg, and the egg hatched, and he was this beautiful girl. Well, two nights ago, after I arrived here, Saturday night, I was watching PBS, and they had a documentary on Helen of Troy. And I was interested in it, especially because Helen of Troy was born from a union of a god and a human. And when she was born as an egg. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I was just fascinated by this documentary. She was born as an egg, and then the egg hatched, and there she was, this beautiful girl. Well, she also comes from the region where there is lots of volcanoes. And so that piqued my interest because Then I would like to know more about the myths of volcanoes around the world, whether they have this egg child. Because the egg child for us is the embryo of the earth. She represents the seeds. She represents growth. And she represents fruits. Anything that is about to be born. Okay. Anyway, back to my talk. All of the physical forms that I just made a list of have spiritual counterparts. And the spiritual counterparts are there to support and to complement and to provide a degree of spirituality to the physical. Our family, in our family genealogy on both sides, we have fire names. And we give the fire names to our children and our grandchildren so they can remember their beginnings, where they come from. And one of the lines in one of our chants say, when the generations have traversed, then the tradition is secure. So generations in front of you and behind of you need to know their connections. And so the one of the dimensions is family connection. Know who your family is. Know where they come from, what names they have. I talked about ancestral memory. I talked about the tradition of fire dances and family genealogy. I also talked about diverse body forms of the fire family. However, it's not the external familial forms that are primary, but it is the elemental sinew of fire that is the determining factor of constancy. So when you finally understand the magnitude of your responsibility of passing down this tradition within the family, you will know that it doesn't have anything to do with with something as profane as nepotism. But it has to do with duty. And more especially for us, with the duty of keeping the fire alive. Again, the fire does not only constitute the flame, but embraces different aspects of our environment. So another dimension to penetrate in order to pass on tradition is knowing your elemental form and your responsibility to it. The key is environment. We are products of our environment, and when I talk about environment, I talk about the natural environment for me. So my natural environment is the southern limits of the sunrise and the sunset, the northern limits of the sunrise and the sunset. This is my environment, everything within it, the rising of the moon and the stars, the ocean, and the ocean pounding against the land or the cliff, causing a plethora of ocean spray, the sound of birds in the treetop, and the sight of an ivy bird sipping on the nectar of the lehua blossom, the fragrance of maile and iliahi. What is iliahi? The fragrance of maile and iliahi, sandalwood of the forest. And then the sight of a red and black river of lava coming from the mountains to the ocean. And then finally the birth of an island. That's my environment. That is the cycle of reciprocating energy. That is the seat of my soul. And so another dimension to penetrate is the satisfaction of reaching for and connecting to your soul that builds passion. So when a kumu or a dance teacher leaves that environment, she can only take her dance with her and not the environment. And the environment is the soul of the dance, it's the soul of the tradition, and it's the soul of the culture. The second generation learning from this particular teacher will do the hand movements, will do the foot movements, will produce a smile when performing, but there's nothing here, and there's nothing here. There's no inkling of the primal imagery. For many supplanted kumu or dance teachers, the pilgrimage to the source or back to the homeland is a very necessary thing to provide a clue to her dancers. So another dimension is making a visual parallel between the language element of the places and things described in the songs or chants. A song or a dance that we hear of, in fact, the very first dance in our myth, it's nice to have that power, yeah? The very first dance in our myth is called Keha'ala Puna. And it's a very simple a dance, and it happens in the myth of the Fire Clan. Pai pai galeo oge gaya age lula ina pule huana na ige oho boe kawai ne amige una na uki e hula le avale ige yo This melody talks about the movement of the grass and the leaves because of the wind, and how the wind makes these things dance. It talks about the ocean and the undulating tide, the high tide and the low tide, the waves moving back and forth. It talks about the circular movement of the ocean and the voice of the ocean as it pounds against the cliff, coming through the groves of trees. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is nature, and it really is the origin or the origin of hula, and the natives imitated nature. And so if the natives witnessing this original movement of nature had kept it at that stage, hula and our cultural practice and our tradition would not have grown. Because this happened eons ago. Innovation, imitation, and creativity is a continuous, ongoing process. And the natural movement of it is to add things to it and eventually acculturate it into our practices. And this evolution then become our new practice. And eventually what we do is adorn this new practice with a spiritual entity. And eventually the dancer learns sacred ceremonies and sacred rituals to honor the nature gods. Ceremonies and rituals to the hula deities or to any deities is another dimension of understanding the sacred. Innovation is not a problem, as long as you know where you come from, and as long as you are aware that innovations and productions are only complementary to your tradition, and eventually for us, to the fire. And it lends itself to the cycle energy of the environment. We have to be able to give back to that environment. If at any time the added piece makes the hair on the back of the neck stand up, then we need to undo it, or we need to eliminate it. That is the intuitive radar in action. And a few years ago, the Halawar, our dance school, came up with a stage production in which we added a modern dance group to it. And so we created all of our chants. We looked at what was going to happen ahead, and we tried to foresee that and created the chants upon that. But we had a lot of interference from our intuition. And so we had to go back and redo a lot of things. And people were very, very weary about what we were doing, because we're probably the most traditional hula group in Hawaii. But we wanted to do a new creative thing. And after all, we practitioners are looked at for our creativity. And so we have to create. But in creating, we have our boundaries. And we are aware of the boundaries. And even gods had their boundaries. But that's another talk. So what I am saying is, spirituality at its height, or sacredness at its height, did not end in 1842 or 1501 or the year 1110. It goes on. Our creativity and our innovation, if spiritually motivated, assist us in expanding or understanding the sacred. After all, it is us who grow into the sacred. And eventually we realize that the sacred is immeasurable. So the hula world today, and I'm sure all of you have seen other forms of hula. The hula world today embraces the sacred and the mundane. And so there is the hula innovation without the communion with the sacred, and there is the hula innovation with spiritual continuum. In both cases, we borrow elements from the world around us as part of this evolutionary process. And the most important thing for us, because we are here today and we are alive, is to keep our practice alive. And so, as I said, I'm sure many of you saw the hula kind of dance that we do in Waikiki and in the hotels. We all do that. We have accepted it as being Hawaiian, but we don't all do the sacred dances, and we don't all do the fire dances. What? I'd like to show Kaumaka Eva's... go, Malila. The greenery that he has on his head, as well as his extremities, are the sacred. They are the manifestation of the hula deity, who is the deity of the forest. So we always wear the sacred. However, the pa'u that he has on, point to your pa'u, the pa'u that he has on, or the skirt, for lack of a better word in English, it was at one time made with bark cloth. This is palon. This is not the sacred. But the sacred thing are the manifestations of the deity. So we do both. Again, we do what we can to keep our practice alive, and we add more things to it. We continue to do that. The gourd drum that you have is strictly Hawaiian. We also have a large drum that we use for dancing, which was migrated from Tahiti. The skin of the drum was always shark. And today the skin of the drum for many people is cowhide. But we still use the drum in the same way. Cow is just a little bit easier to get a hold of than sharks. Some of us still have shark skins. So these are some of the changes that we went through in order to survive. The main thing is survive. I mentioned earlier an iiwi bird, and the iiwi bird is a wren, comes from somewhere, came to Hawaii over thousands of years ago. And in order for it to survive, it eventually had a longer beak that curved this way. And because that was the food source, in order for it to get to the food source, the beak had to curve. And so we have a lot of birds, we have some insects who has changed in order to survive. That same example of survival of our practices. So before I close, am I on time? 2 minutes. Before I close, I would really like to thank you for inviting me and whoever was responsible for saying my name. Sort of made me nervous for a few months. But I'm good now. And I feel very humbled, actually, that I was invited and to be able to share my passion with all of you, the passion of being Hawaiian and maintaining certain cultural practices. I'd like to also share with you an ending to a ceremony, because what we're doing right now is a ceremony. We began with asking permission to be here, of the seen as well as the unseen. We began with asking permission to share what we have with all of you. And now, in 1 minute, I'm going to close this, and I will say a few words in Hawaiian. And then I want all of you to practice right now. Cup your hands, both hands, and you will do an upo'i. Twice, just twice. And let it fly, okay? Okay, so I just want to go down the list and look at the dimensions of what we have to do in order to maintain our practices. One, make use of your ancestral memory. You have it. We all have it. Use your intuitive sense, because we're born with it. And somewhere along the line, we lose it because we become logical people. Know your family genealogy. Know your elemental form or your clan form and be responsible for it, which means be responsible for a part of your environment. Know the language element of your songs and your dance so that image can stay alive. Stays alive in your head as well as stays alive in the elements, out in the environment rather. Find and connect with your soul. Do ceremonies and rituals to your gods because that connects you to the sacred. Continue your cultural practice, and as long as we are alive, we're responsible, as I said, for our cultural practice. So continue that. And ua noa ke kanawai a ke akua, a mama ua noa lele vali aku no. Mahalo.